Hello, a very good day to you all, and welcome to Marca's Eye on La Liga, your number one stop for all things Spanish football in an English-speaking environment. Brought to you, of course, by www.marca.com/en, Marca in English. All the latest news and reviews on the website and on the Twitter page as well, at Marca in English, at Marca in English, to keep up to date with everything that was going on in a manic weekend of La Liga action. We thought we'd had the best of it after Saturday, but Sunday as well brought us a very tasty tie of Real Betis against Valencia. We're going to dive into all of the action from the weekend and look ahead to the Champions League as well for the big guns. And I'm delighted to say that there are two of the finest footballing minds that Marca has to offer on the show today. First and foremost, he is a semi-regular on the show. Delighted to welcome back Mr. Ewan McTare, at eMcTare on Twitter. How you doing, Ewan, mate?
Yeah, good. It was a good weekend of La Liga football. And yeah, like you say, with that tasty Real Betis-Valencia game, you know, I think we thought Saturday was all the Champions League teams, but Sunday still had something good to offer. You know, lots of quality from top to almost near the bottom in La Liga.
It's interesting how obviously La Liga's kind of sorted out the fixture list for the Champions League sides to all play on the Saturday, and that will help them out, you would think, in midweek when we get to the Champions League action. We'll be looking ahead to that as well. Whereas in England already this weekend, we had some managers bemoaning the schedule straight off an international break, talking about how, for instance, it wasn't right that Manchester United played Liverpool straight after an international break, and with big European ties coming up for them in the week as well. La Liga perhaps a little more considerate to their big sides, which is an interesting thought considering what we spoke about last week and in previous weeks to do with the playing of that Barcelona game behind closed doors against Las Palmas after everything that went on in the city a few weeks ago. Trying to put a positive spin on La Liga, I think, this week, Ewan.
Yeah, exactly. The way they've been able to look out for the European teams is really helped them, I think, in recent seasons.
Well, we'll see if it will help them this week in the Champions League. Delighted to say that joining Ewan and myself on the show, a man making his debut but very much heavily involved in the writing or on the written side of Marca in English, a man I know very well indeed, Mr. Chris Winterburn, joining us at CM Winterburn on Twitter. No relation to Nigel, I presume, Chris?
No, absolutely no relation.
Quick to get those aspersions completely removed and out of the way, and get rid of that idea. How you doing, Chris, man? It's been a long time no speak, mate, and enjoying the La Liga football, I do hope.
It has been. No, very well, thank you. And yeah, it's been a good weekend. I'm still a little just coming down from the draw between Atletico and Barcelona. That was a really enthralling game, despite the fact there was only two goals.
Well, there was going to be plenty of talk about on the pitch and off the pitch involving Atleti against Barcelona. And let's really kick off the day with that game. It was the marquee encounter of the weekend in La Liga, the Saturday night extravaganza in Madrid. And after everything that's gone on politically in the country and what we've seen in Barcelona and in Madrid, in the streets and the protests and marches that we've seen in recent weeks, this was going to be a game that had connotations that would ripple through the whole of Spain and not just for the football that we saw on show. Before we dive into what we saw on the pitch, what was the atmosphere like off the pitch around Madrid in the build-up to this game? You, and I know you're a man with kind of boots on the ground in Madrid at the moment. What was the feeling through the city going into Saturday night?
I think ahead of the game, the feeling was one of worry. Both the presidents spoke about it in the build-up to the game, sort of calling for both of their fans to make this. They said, this is a football game, not a political protest. And there was a bit of worry that there could be some trouble. There were only 250 official Barcelona travelling fans, although there were plenty more sneaking into the home end as well. But from what I saw out around the stadium, there was a good atmosphere. It's an interesting sight that this new stadium's on, because it is quite out of the city, so everybody round and about the stadium probably is going to the game. And yeah, everybody was in the bars round about, wandering around, seeing the new stadium, checking out the club shop. They've got this walk of legends with all the plaques of legendary Atletico players. So I think there were some fans of both clubs going to have a wee sort of stamp their boot on Arda Turan's plaque there. So there was a bit of a sort of jovial atmosphere ahead of the game. And, you know, obviously one or two chance again, Barcelona, and there were a lot of Spain flags at the start of the game, but that quickly died down, and everybody really just focused on the football, which really helped by just how well Atletico Madrid started that game.
I suppose that's a big positive in terms of what we've seen then from the reaction and the build-up to the game and during the game as well, that it didn't boil over in any way, shape or form, as there was a potential that it could have done after the hot political climate continues to bubble and simmer along in Spain. Let's talk about what we saw then on the pitch. And Ernesto Valverde's Barcelona leaving it late to get a point away from Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid. Saul Niguez with the bright opening goal after 21 minutes, but Luis Suarez's header 8 minutes from time, pulling Barca level. We spoke about this game as a kind of a preview on the podcast last week, although I do appreciate that neither of you were on the show. I hope you were both listening, of course, back home. And Chris, I'll start with you on this then. Barca, do you think they were happy to come away with a point and just a point, considering how stingy Atletico are whenever they play Barca? But they do have a great record, Barca, in Madrid against Atleti. Do you think a point is okay, especially when you consider how far back still Real Madrid are in the La Liga table at the moment?
Well, I think one of the positives is how far Real Madrid are behind for Barca, and I think that played into their minds after the final whistle. But I think they were certainly happy to take a draw because it's a very difficult... Well, it's a new stadium, but going to play Atletico away from home is traditionally very difficult, especially in recent years. And I think whilst they didn't quite hit top gear on the night, I think they, for that reason they were quite happy to take a point. But the substitutions made certainly showed Barcelona a bad influence for the game from last season. I mean, Paulinho's introduction certainly gave them something different from midfield, and it actually contributed to the equalising goal with his run taking Stefan Savic away from marking Suarez.
We all remember Paulinho, of course, as a bit of a flop at Tottenham Hotspur, but he has really rejuvenated his career in the last few months or so, obviously arriving at Barcelona, settling in very well at the new club as well, Chris.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's a transfer that everyone was sceptical about. I know I certainly was. I thought Jean-Michel Seri would have been a better signing, certainly for what Barcelona historically have wanted in the midfield. But Paulinho, a bit like Ivan Rakitic when he arrived a couple of years ago, gave them something different in midfield. I think Paulinho's done exactly the same, and he certainly hit the ground running.
Rakitic being replaced by Paulinho. We haven't seen them alongside each other too much, although Paulinho does give defensive stability and a bit of playmaking into the heart of the pitch. What about De La Feo as well? Slightly left out in the cold, really, since Dembele came in, and then this switch to a 4-4-2, getting his opportunity off the bench after the hour mark. And his impact... He's not expecting to start, I imagine, in this Barca side. We're kind of presuming that he's at least levelled his expectations to know that he's not going to be one of the big three in this Barca side. But he's still eager to make an impact off the bench. So hard working and half grafting as well at this point.
I think there's an acceptance, excuse me, both within Barcelona and for De La Feo himself, that he will not be one of the main players at Barcelona. But there's a willingness on his part to work hard and produce when he's on the pitch, and I think it's something that's worked well so far this season. It's obvious he's not at the same talent level as the players ahead of him, but he's doing well at the moment, and I think if he can just steer them to January, playing, coming off the bench, producing when he can, and maybe they can go back into the market and Dembele's got to return, but I certainly think he's doing a job at the moment.
Ewan, it's another game for Atleti on home soil against a big side, like we saw in the Champions League, that they've had the lead and haven't been able to hold on to it. Obviously, going into a new ground, Simeone has been saying that this is still an absolutely rocking environment. But is there any problem at all about just not being able to hold on to these leads like they were perhaps able to do in the past few years or so with that defensive solidarity that they've had?
Yeah, I think they're definitely lacking that a little bit this season, that ability to grind out a result. You know, they've had 5 draws already this season. Now, that's more draws than they've had victories so far. And it's been a generally positive start to the season. They've had some decent results, and they have had a trickier fixture list than most, not just because they've had to play the first three La Liga games of the season away from home, but to have come out with this many points at this stage of the season isn't too bad. But it is a bit worrying that they've had some leads and let them slip like they did, as you mentioned, against Barcelona and against Chelsea. One of the problems for that, I think, is the fact that they're not able to defend crosses anymore. I mean, 7 of the goals they've conceded this season have been headers, and just a few seasons ago, that would have been unimaginable. I mean, the year they won the league, they conceded 4 headed goals all La Liga season. This year, they've already conceded four in the league, as well as the Alvaro Morata one in the Champions League. So we used to talk about how strong Atletico Madrid's defence was, and this was a team that was built from the back and hoped to nick the odd goal, whereas now I think it's a case of they obviously have a fantastic goalkeeper in Jan Oblak, but for them to win the game, they maybe need to score multiple goals, given the instability in the back line.
Well, they may not have Jan Oblak for too long either, if all the transfer rumours surrounding him are to be believed, and a lot of interest from some of the big clubs, or perhaps bigger clubs, not to disrespect Atletico Madrid there, around Europe in getting his services in. What about where El Simeone has kind of not been able to quite get it right? Because it's one of those sorts of results that, again, going into it, Atleti would have probably taken a point as well, considering how well Barca have started. But when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it all, you know, Valverde's had to make a couple of changes after the hour marks. It wasn't working for Barca, and they weren't able to hold on after Sol Niguez gave them the opening goal of the game after 21 minutes. Simeone's got to just find that little bit of extra va-va-voom out of this Atleti side at the moment. It's a point that will feel like two dropped rather than one taken still.
Yeah, I think his substitutions were, as much as Valverde's substitutions changed the game in a positive way for Barcelona, I think Simeone's maybe negatively impacted them. Bringing on Nico Gaitán, who hasn't really done anything much ever since he arrived at the club, and then also bringing on Thomas Partey. Normally, that's so effective, but to bring him on and to take Carrasco off is maybe sort of put Atletico a little bit too much on the back foot, and invited Barcelona onto them, and obviously they eventually got that equalising goal, and maybe could have won it at the end with Suarez had one more chance, and Messi obviously had that free kick right at the last second. So, yeah, Simeone's substitutions maybe impacted the game in a negative sense for Atletico Madrid, but at the same time, it was, I think, credit really does have to go to Valverde for what he did and the way he was able to react and to... yeah, bring the game back into Barcelona's favour.
We continue to sing Valverde's praises as well, Chris. I mean, the talk a lot of out of this game on Sunday morning and even into Sunday night before the thriller, of course, of Valencia against Real Betis, which we'll come on to, was that this result doesn't show the quality that Barca have in their squad and the depth that they have, but it shows the tactical nuance, of Valverde's mind, in that he's able to adapt and adjust on the flow and on the go, and once more it's he who gets the plaudits. Again, they've really found a gem who is thriving with just a bit of extra quality in a starting 11 and in his squad finally in Valverde.
Absolutely, and I think he came to Barcelona and we all know it was a difficult summer, we don't need to go into that again, but he sort of just focused on the coach inside of it whilst everything's been going on around him, and the players are playing for him. That's been evident since the first game he was in charge, even if the Supercopa was a difficult two-legged affair. But he's just found something, and on Saturday it was a major surprise when Andre Gomez started. I don't think anybody saw that coming. He's sort of been the forgotten man at Barcelona, but whilst he didn't have two exceptional the first half, he did okay, and then there was changes in the second half from Valverde that sort of put Atletico under more pressure. They sat back and had to invite more pressure on as they tried to close out that one goal lead, and the pressure just built and built, and whilst it's not classic Barcelona in what we've become accustomed to over the last decade, it's been more effective, and I certainly think it's similar, not a revolution, but the tactical boost that came when Luis Enrique first arrived as well, I think it's something similar to that, and it'll be interesting to see when they have. This was the first really difficult fixture that Barcelona have had in the league this season, and I think they negotiated it well, but the real tests I think are going to come later on in the Champions League and in the two games against Real Madrid, and I think we'll have to wait and see how Valverde negotiates those matches. But he has an exceptional record when he was with Athletic Club in making similar tactical decisions.
I mean, it's something we've spoken about a lot, isn't that change is needed at Barcelona, and a change in style perhaps at times, and Valverde seems to have done that and come in and produce the goods straight from the get-go. Let's talk about them going into the Champions League then. It's two very comfortable ties, you would imagine, for both Barca and Atletico Madrid. It's a long bit of travel to Carabag for Atleti, but they've got a nice little run coming up as well, albeit three away games in a row now against Celta de Vigo and Elche. But then they've got Villarreal and Karabag again in the Champions League, both on home soil after their away trip coming up this week. This is suddenly a time where no slip-ups now for Diego Simeone. Time to put the pedal to the metal, so to speak, get 5 wins in these next 5 games and show that they can fight on all fronts and all competitions.
Absolutely, and I think one of the issues, I mean, Ewan mentioned it before, that Atletico may be having to rely a bit more, certainly on Oblak, and also their attacking players, because the defence isn't what it was. I think that's one of the concerns. Certainly before the international break, there was an admission that there's an over-reliance on Antoine Griezmann, and when he doesn't score, whilst Angel Correa has worked really hard this season and found a place in the team for himself, they've not been as clinical in front of goal, and there's almost a sense that when Griezmann doesn't score, Atletico won't score. Certainly Diego Costa's arrival in January is going to help, but they face 2 games against Karabag now which absolutely must win. After the draw against Roma and the late defeat to Chelsea, they cannot afford to not take 6 points from those games, especially with Chelsea playing each other twice in the same period.
Yeah, it's interesting. Griezmann's had this slow start to the season that's almost gone under the radar. Just 2 goals in La Liga so far. The strikes against Malaga, the winner, of course, in early September, and against Sevilla 3 games ago. Barcelona, their Champions League trip takes them back to the Camp Nou, taking on Olympiacos this week. And I mean, these are the games that Barca, just to make sure that they do top a slightly difficult group for them, you expect them to be banging the goals in, Ewan.
I think so. I mean, for them to have already defeated Juventus, albeit at home and Sporting away from home, that's probably 2 of the toughest fixtures in the group. So the fact they got maximum points from those 2, you'd expect them now to make those count for something and to win these sort of easier games in the group against Olympiacos. And there might even be an opportunity almost to rest some players. I mean, you're not going to rest players for an away game against Atletico Madrid, even if you do have a Champions League tie coming up. But yeah, maybe, and they've got Malaga at the weekend as well, so maybe this is a chance to sort of let some of the players who are away around the globe for international duty to have a bit of a breather, because they couldn't take the weekend immediately after the FIFA matches off because of how difficult that game against Atletico Madrid was.
Yeah, no rest and relaxation for the players returning from South America. And anybody that followed the South American World Cup qualifiers know that that Wednesday night World Cup qualification was a bit of a wild one, including a Lionel Messi hat-trick. He wasn't able to get on the score sheet this weekend, but perhaps he will against Olympiacos, unless he's given that time and a bit of a leg rest as well in the Champions League in midweek. Let's talk a little bit about one of the other sides that played on Saturday, and let's talk about Real Madrid. Let's talk about the near gaffe at Getafe in the Madrid derby, one of the lesser-known Madrid derbies, shall we say. 85th-minute winner from Cristiano Ronaldo, getting Madrid out of jail. And Ewan, I mean, for Los Blancos, and again, you're a Madrid man, you'll know that this rivalry isn't that big, but they were expected to really sweep past Getafe going into this weekend, and it just wasn't the case. It's more stumbles for Real Madrid, who we were lauding and almost giving them the title before we'd even had a ball kicked in La Liga, just because of the squad depth. But it's not deep enough, it seems, at times.
Yeah, this away fixture at Getafe is a weird one, because for many years, the fans at Getafe were Real Madrid fans as well as being Getafe fans. And it's only a recent phenomenon that the two teams have actually started meeting each other in La Liga. So there's always a section of the home crowd maybe that would prefer an away win in that one, but they almost didn't see it. And it was, yeah, Zinedine Zidane, unlike Barcelona Atletico Madrid, he did feel that he had the chance to rest some players for this game. He left Casemiro out the squad, Rafael Varane was out the squad, Luka Modric was on the bench, and Isco was left on the bench as well. And it wasn't until he brought Isco on in the 72nd minute that Real Madrid actually started to click. I mean, they had most of the ball in the first half, but they didn't do all that much with it, and it wasn't until a defensive error that Benzema got that opportunity to take the lead. And then, yeah, once Getafe equalised, it really didn't look like Madrid were going to do anything until Isco came on. And, of course, Ronaldo grabs the headlines and he got his first La Liga goal. But I think we really need to talk about just how fantastic that pass was, that sort of almost street football kind of chip over the whole defence from Isco to a wide-open Ronaldo, and he was able to finish. So, yeah, a bit of a scare for Real Madrid, but at the end of the day, they got 3 points, and given Barcelona's draw with Atletico, that's 2 pulled back, and Yeah, that's probably what they were hoping for at the start of the weekend.
Well, keep talking to me about Isco and that pass then, Ewan. If you want to talk about it, keep telling me about it and keep telling me just how good Isco is in terms of... I mean, we were speaking about Ballon d'Or nominations, and really, over the last 8 months or so, it's difficult to think of anybody else in Spain who has played consistently better football nationally and internationally as well.
Yeah, I think if the Ballon d'Or really is for performances on the pitch in 2017 and not for what players did in the 2016-17 entire season, or not for what players do off the pitch media-wise, or not for how much money they got sold for, if we're just looking at how well they played on the pitch in actual football matches in the year of 2017, starting January 1st, which is quite a big assumption to make, because I don't think that's how the Ballon d'Or works. But if we are just looking at that, then obviously one of Messi and Ronaldo will win it. But I think there's a real good case to make for Isco being the third best player in the world, if looking at 2017.
I think there are plenty that would agree with you as well. What about an importance of a goal for Cristiano Ronaldo, Chris, in terms of getting the shooting boots back on once again, of course, coming back from his absence from the starting 11. Good to see Benzema back as well for Real Madrid this weekend. As Ewan said, a fair few rested by Zidane. But important to get Ronaldo firing and being that crunch man again for the crutch that they can lean on in times of need, because they have needed players at times to step up in those vital moments this season, and they haven't been able to.
Absolutely. And I think it's been a bit of a weird one, the way this has been talked about in Madrid. I mean, because it's been obvious Ronaldo's been struggling in front of goal, at least domestically anyway. The suspension hasn't helped him, and as Messi's gone shooting away in the goal-scoring charts, that's put the pressure on him. But I think he got the goal in the end, and I think that he struggled, but Real Madrid players have sort of talked about him not being able to score, so they've mentioned it, but they've also declared at the same time that it's not a problem. No one's thinking about it, but they're taking the time to mention it, which I found peculiar. But again, he didn't have the greatest of games. He had chances, was thwarted by a goalkeeper again, but he did finally get the goal, but he now has to continue to deliver in the league, and obviously he's done it over the years. But one point I would mention to Real Madrid is last year they were able to rest Ronaldo consistently. They had players coming off the bench or playing well. Certainly Isco's rise to prominence helped this, but Alvaro Morata as well was coming off the bench, and unfortunately Boyan Maiorral is not the same quality of player as Morata is at this moment, so you can't really rely on him to come in and produce. So I think they're going to have to play Ronaldo a lot more, certainly with Gareth Bale absent through injury, and that may well stop him being as productive as he was in the latter stages of the Champions League last season, when he came into that period from April onwards really fresh.
Well, we do know that Ronaldo can score, because he's bagged 4 in 2 games in the Champions League, and finally now off the mark in La Liga. He's going to be important, of course, this weekend, because they welcome a Tottenham side in the Champions League, this midweek even. And a Tottenham side that have really found their groove. Harry Kane is being tipped as one of the best forwards in Europe at the moment, and perhaps in the world at the moment. This always seems to come around with the English press overhyping things. The Spanish press, of course, would never do that. www.marca.com/en for all of your Spanish footballing news, of course. But Tottenham, very solid under Pochettino defensively. Going to be difficult, in theory, for Madrid to break down. They do have a strong attack. They have a wonderful player in Christian Eriksen to sit in the heart of the pitch. I'm no Tottenham fan either, but I'm a big fan of Christian Eriksen, who goes under the radar time and time again as the Premier League's best players. This is going to be a real scrap on their hands. Tottenham, considered perhaps in Europe a few years ago to be a bit of a walkover, a little easier to play against, of course, aside from when Gareth Bale was tearing it up that one year. But now, this is a Tottenham side that really want to flex their muscles and bounce back from last year's disappointment in the Champions League, show that they can play at this elite level, and a trip to the Bernabeu. I mean, any travelling fan, any travelling player always gets a little bit of an extra kick when they go to play Madrid in Madrid. It just depends whether Madrid can kind of kick the life out of them early on and suck the life out of them and dominate on home soil, which has been difficult this year as well, Ewan. I mean, it's a real mix-up this midweek for Real Madrid. It could be a real upset as well and a real disappointment for them.
Yeah, I think with this sort of double-header between Real Madrid and Tottenham, I think both clubs and both fans of both clubs are maybe looking forward to the away fixture more than the other one. I mean, Real Madrid have struggled a bit at home, and so have Tottenham, so both of them maybe feel that they have a chance of getting a better result away from home, where they've both been more comfortable for a number of reasons and a number of peculiar reasons. And for the fans as well, for Tottenham fans, although they were there just, I think, 4 years ago, a trip to the Bernabeu is always special. And then for Real Madrid fans to be able to play at Wembley for the first time. That's going to be one to look out for as well. So, yeah, this is one that maybe Tottenham are looking forward to a little bit more than Real Madrid, because from a Real Madrid point of view, this is a game to be a little bit apprehensive about, especially with, although they were able to defeat Dortmund in Dortmund, with a team like that in the group, there's no room for a slip-up, really, if Real Madrid were to come out of this doubleheader with Spurs with a defeat or a couple.
It's probably one of the best ties in the Champions League this week. Also involved in the Champions League, of course, Sevilla. Not really how they wanted to go into their European battle coming up with a loss on the road against Athletic Club. A 1-0 defeat. Eduardo Berizzo, the Sevilla manager, coming out this week and saying that he insists that his side didn't deserve to lose. It doesn't matter whether you think they deserve to or not, Eduardo. You've got to start getting results. And this Sevilla side is still just so temperamental and shaky from time to time, Chris, in terms of their form and their ability to hold on to leads and to find their way back into games that they're just struggling in slightly.
Well, I think it's a hangover from last season. They caught everyone's eye with Jorge Sampaoli, and they played some really wonderful football. And then he left, and they've sort of taken a summer to recover, and unfortunately it's extended into the season. But whilst they're not overly consistent, they're still sitting pretty comfortably in fourth spot in La Liga. And I think that's something that shows the quality of the squad, but I do think the consistency, especially as the Champions League games keep coming and it's a midweek game and then a weekend game, I think the consistency then is going to be a real concern.
You don't sound too concerned though, Chris, with it. I mean, as you mentioned, they're still sat in fourth spot, but for a Sevilla side that we've seen kick on and kick on to the next level and next level, and we're waiting for that next level to come again. Sampaoli, as you mentioned, obviously has gone, taken the Argentinian national team job. But there doesn't seem to be that step up this season in terms of quality in that consistency. And at the end of the day, it's consistency that gets you through into those top three positions, into the Champions League spots, and holds you onto a Europa League spot when you get everybody from kind of ninth to sixth fighting out for the last few European competition places. It's something they're going to need to have, that's for sure. And hangovers, you can't allow a hangover to linger for too long. We all know what a two-day hangover is like. If you have one for half a season, it's not going to be good enough. And do you think it's okay for Berizzo to come out and say his side didn't deserve to win the game, even though, you know, didn't deserve to lose the game, even though they did lose it? I mean, it's all talk at the end of the day. You've got to start producing the results on the pitch.
Well, I think comments like that are only meant for his team. And I think it's to portray a positive attitude towards his team to the public. But I don't think it's overly a concern, him saying that at this stage of the season. I do think there's a lot of football left to be played. And it's important to remember that the wholesale change that's gone on at Sevilla over the last 6 months or so. Monchi's left and Sampaoli's left. So it's a totally new, as much as I dislike the word in this context, it's a totally new project. Things are going to take time and they're still picking up results. And I think they're going to have a tougher year this year, because just look at the teams around them being more competitive. I think Valencia are certainly going to be battling for a Champions League spot this year. They've settled really well, as we'll come on to later. But I just think there's no need to panic as yet at Sevilla. I think we're still in October. We're still early on. They've got quality in that, and that will get them over the line in most matches, although it didn't this weekend. But I just think until there's a real slide of results, I don't think there's a need to panic. But obviously with only 9 goals scored in the league this season, I think that's a concern, certainly.
Right, and on the other foot, Athletic Club Bilbao, I mean, this is a side that is so frustrating year after year with the potential they show, the quality that they do bring in and keep in their squad. I mean, I really like Laporta at the back in the centre-back position. I always like Balenciaga getting forward down the left flank and Lecoue on the right this weekend. Vesco had a wonderful game in the heart of the pitch. Adoris is a player that, you know, experience, goal-scoring ability, can miss easy chances at times. And they're one that, if they got consistency in this side, could easily be putting themselves in Europa League and perhaps Champions League contention for these spots. And a big win for them this weekend in terms of just giving them a hefty boost in the La Liga table, Ewan.
Yeah, this was a team that started the season so well and really did look like you say, like a team that should aspire to the Europa League or maybe the Champions League. But I think the cruciate ligament injury to Iker Muniain was absolutely devastating, not just for the player but for the whole club, because he really sort of become their focal point, playing just behind Adoris and attacking midfield. So To have to replace him for almost a whole season, I mean, he's not really expected back until April, if at all, this season. So, yeah, that was a major blow for Athletic Bilbao. And for them to be able to defeat a Champions League team like Sevilla was a really big a big win for them, especially after not winning in four La Liga matches. And what I think I found most surprising about Berizzo's comments about how Sevilla deserved to win was the fact that I don't think they did. I think Athletic Bilbao were... They were much the better team in that game and probably could have won by more if they really decided to turn it on. They sort of dropped back towards the end of that one. But yeah, so I think they're the kind of team that probably still expects to get a Europa League spot. But yeah, that losing Muniain was a massive blow for them and any chance of them fighting for the top four with Sevilla and Valencia, I think that's now gone out the window.
A long trip as well to Spartak Moscow on Tuesday night in that group, of course, with Maribor and Liverpool as well. And Moscow really like the middle team that could cause problems in that group, along with Liverpool, Sevilla and Liverpool expected to battle it out for top spot in that Champions League group. Tough one away from home for Sevilla, one they've got to get their act together and Berizzo's got to get them back firing on point then for the away trip. Will they take a point going away to Moscow, or will they want to get 3 points just to kind of keep Moscow away and off their back?
I think they should expect to come away with at least a point. And yeah, the fact that Liverpool were held against Moscow last time out means that, you know, there's ground to be made up there if they can come away with all three. But yeah, they'd be really disappointed, I think, if they lost that game. But as we know, all these trips out to the east of Europe, the travelling can really take its toll on the players, and it's not ever as easy as it will be at home. So yeah, it wouldn't be surprising if they don't come away with the win, but I think it would be a surprise if they were to lose that one.
It'd be a difficult one indeed for Sevilla, who have had a solid but inconsistent start. And I know that seems like a bit of an oxymoron, but it does play out when you look at the league table and their standing, and then you look at the form and how they've actually played a lot of these early games to start the season. Right, we've covered a bit of the Champions League coming up this week. There's only one more game that I really want to sink my teeth into. My goodness, what a game it was. I mean, we picked this out as being the best tie on the Sunday in La Liga last week, and my goodness, it didn't fail to live up to expectations. A 6-3 win for Valencia against Real Betis. Valencia taking a 4-0 lead, and then 11 minutes to go, Campbell, Sanabria and Christian Tello score 3 in 5 minutes to pull Betis back within a hair's breadth of at least salvaging something from it on home soil before the man, the myth, the legend, the goal-scoring phenomenon in La Liga, Simone Zaza, steps up with 2 minutes to go, fires one home, and Pereira as well caps off the 6-3 victory for Valencia. A wild ride then for Betis and Valencia, and a 9-goal thriller that really was a thriller all the way. I mean, Ewan, do you have any sympathy at all for some of those Betis fans that left early and then came back only to sit down and see their side fail at the final hurdle?
No, not at all. You should never leave a football game before the final whistle. As a St. Brown fan, I know it's very tempting at times, but yeah, you've got to stick it out to the end. You never know what can happen. But yeah, at the end, I mean, everybody was applauding, even the Betis fans. I think they were applauding their team's effort, and also I think the quality shown by Valencia, I think people just appreciated it was a good game. And you know, nine different goal scorers as well, and a penalty save. And if that penalty had gone in from Sergio Leon, that would have been 10 different scores in a La Liga match, and that would have been the first time that's ever happened in the 89-year history of the league. There's never been a match with 10 different goal scorers for obvious reasons, but we were so close to seeing that on Sunday night. But yeah, 9 scores and a very busy job for whoever was filling out that score sheet afterwards.
Oh, Chris, you can tell Ewan's been on the Opta stat pack, haven't you, with the post-match statistics there. In terms of Valencia, we keep saying that they just look like a rejuvenated side time and time again this year, and they continue to impress us with their goal-scoring form, particularly in Zaza, of course, who's had an excellent start to his time in La Liga this season. But in terms of Valencia in general, can you put your finger on a big point that they've been able to improve on this season and get it all right with Marcelino at the helm?
I don't think I can be more enthused by how they've started this season. They've been fantastic. I think we've seen over the last couple of years, they've had maybe 2 or 3 years ago, they had success and then the best players would leave. And then they've just sort of been on, it's been like a runaway train, disaster after disaster. and they've never been able to find that consistency. But now, with Marcelino arriving, they have got an identity. They've brought players in who really add something to the team. I mean, Jeffrey Kondogbia, he's playing some of the finest football of his career at this moment. He had a difficult spell in Italy with Internazionale, but he's really looking like the player that excelled at both Sevilla and Monaco. And they've brought good young players in as well. Andres Pereira, I mean, most Manchester United supporters would suggest that they thought he was ready to be in the first team. And he's gone out on loan to Valencia and he's done really well. And Gonzalo Guedes from Paris Saint-Germain, he's been excellent as well. So they've got young, hungry players who haven't really either had the chance to succeed or haven't succeeded at other supposed bigger clubs. And they're hungry to impress. And they've got Kondogbia in as well. And I just think there's a balance and an identity about them. They look like they can easily contend for a Champions League qualification spot.
Smart move by Marcelino in the aftermath of this game. Just saying, look, we can't compete with Real Madrid and Barcelona. He knows that in Valencia, and Ewan, we've seen this time and time again, if things start to go right for a small period of time, the expectation is that that will continue, and he is already playing down those chances of any sort of title push with them just sat 4 points off Barcelona in second place in La Liga. You'd have had great odds on that. Only three teams undefeated so far in the La Liga campaign, Barca, Atleti and Valencia. But this is almost like damage control, reverse damage control, because there's no damage been done yet, but he's making sure that people are just have their expectations weighted slightly on the realistic side with this Valencia side.
Yeah, he definitely wants the fans to remain realistic, because I think he knows, you know, I think he genuinely believes that a title challenge is beyond them, but it's very reminiscent of what Diego Simeone said all through the 2013-14 season when Atletico Madrid had struggled for a few years, had hit some bleak times and all of a sudden hired a very inspiring and manager who came in with his 4-4-2 and said they couldn't win the league, and obviously we know how that story ended. So maybe we shouldn't rule it out, but again, at this kind of stage and even a later stage in the season last year, Sevilla also looked like they might be in with a chance of pushing for the title, and obviously they ultimately collapsed. So I think that is beyond them, but as I think Chris mentioned early on in the show, I mean, Champions League place is definitely on the table for Valencia if they can see this out and grab it and maybe take fourth spot away from a Sevilla side that at the start of the season probably thought that it was theirs to lose.
And the word on everybody's lips as well, Kondogbia, Kondogbia, Kondogbia. Chris mentioned him, we've mentioned him time and time again. He has been a brilliant little acquisition for them in the heart of the pitch and just anchoring things once again. Right, gentlemen, we are running almost over time here, so we will leave it there for today here on Eye on La Liga. Of course, the wild ride will continue into the Champions League and next weekend as well with the La Liga fixtures, giving us a bit of Levante against Getafe next weekend to kick it off on the Saturday. Betis taking on Alaves. Valencia against Sevilla, the tastiest of the ties perhaps on the Saturday. Of course, Barcelona taking on Malaga as well in the Camp Nou after their Champions League exploits this week. Villarreal, Las Palmas, Celta de Vigo against Atletico Madrid. Leganes against Athletic Club. And Real Madrid against Eibar. And Ewan, I'm sure you're going to be gunning for the possibility of an Eibar point at least at the Bernabeu with Madrid's home form.
Well, they managed it last season even when Madrid were strong at home. So the fact they've struggled so far this season, maybe there's an opportunity for Eibar. But at the same time, Eibar have scored just 3 goals in 8 matches. And when Real Madrid always score, that means you need to score as well. Maybe that one's going to go down as a home clean sheet.
It would be a much-needed victory at the Bernabeu, especially after all the comments that were made about how Madrid feel under pressure when they play there at the moment. The Monday night, of course, in 7 days' time, sees Sociedad against Espanyol and Deportivo La Coruña against Girona, the new boys. And, of course, the Champions League football, just to remind you of the fixtures as well, as Real Madrid take on Tottenham on Tuesday and Sevilla away at Spartak Moscow that night. Barcelona take on Olympiacos on Wednesday night at home. And, of course, Carabag hosts Atletico Madrid as well that evening. Chris, pleasure to chat with you once again, mate. Really appreciate you taking the time out to join us here on the show, man. Looking forward to seeing more of your work as well on marker.com/EN. You can find Chris at CM Winterburn. That's at CM Winterburn. Really appreciate it, mate. Always a pleasure, never a chore.
Pleasure, mate. My pleasure.
And of course, Ewan, always appreciate yourself as well joining us on the show, Mr. E. McTear. E. McTear, E-M-C-T-E-A-R. On Twitter to follow him. Always a pleasure, mate. Thanks so much, as always.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
We will be back in 7 days' time to have a look back at another wild weekend of La Liga football. Can anything top the 9-goal thriller that we saw this weekend to cap off Sunday's action? We will see. Keep your eyes on the Champions League and, of course, the Europa League action coming up as well in midweek. Get onto marca.com/EN for all of the fallout from the big European ties. Get onto Twitter as well, @MarcaInEnglish. On Facebook too, just type in Marca in English into the search engine in Facebook. Like the page on there. You'll be able to stay abreast of all of the breaking news on your favourite social media outlets. And of course, you can get onto iTunes or Audio Boom and get onto Eye on La Liga. Like, review, rate the podcast. Let us know what you want to hear us talking about, particularly via the Facebook page, and we'll try and get back to you if possible, or even mention it on the show. Until next week then, plenty of footballing action coming our way. It's so nice to have the international break over. Domestic campaigns continue. Barca continue to be dominant as well. Just the draw on the road against Atleti on the weekend. Luis Suarez back in goal-scoring form. Can he continue that and kick on for the rest of the season and join Lionel Messi in that front two, formidable front two that the Catalan club has? We will see in 7 days' time. Enjoy the football. Have a good one.